Thank you for joining us. I am filling in for our chair today, Carlos Castellanos, vice chair. Okay. So we've been given the signal to start. I think we're still one short of a quorum. So what I'll do is I'm going to skip over the approval of the minutes, and hopefully one other member will show up. So then we'll go on to the next agenda item. And when do I introduce? Okay. Yeah. So prior to continuing with the agenda, we wanted to introduce our new member we have. We have over here today joining us, Cynthia Murray. And I don't know if you wanted to say a few words about yourself and tell us a little bit.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to working with all of you and getting to know you. And I am the CEO of North Bay Leadership Council. We represent employers in Marin, Sonoma, and Napa, and I'm very pleased to be a part of this and doing the important work that the Advisory Council is doing. Got the right name. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome, Cynthia. Glad to have you here. Let's go through that, and I will relay what Rich has suggested is that for Cynthia's purpose, so that you can hear who we are and where we're from. Let's go around, starting right next to Cynthia. I guess Jim, you want to start with your just announce yourself. Where you
okay. represent? Okay, I think I'm on. I am Jim Blackston. I represent disabled people from San Francisco, and my partner is under the table here, Acura, my guide dog.
I'm Harriet Wool from Santa Clara County, representing older people.
Hi, welcome. I'm Shireen Malik-Avzali, representing low-income populations in San Mateo County.
Yes, and I'm Richard Burnett. I represent Solana County, representing the minority constituency.
Oh. Naomi Armenta, representing the disabled community of Alameda County.
Rich Hedges from San Mateo County, representing the senior population.
Alan Talansky from San Mateo County, representing the economy.
I'm Pam Grove, the staff liaison.
And I'm Carlos Castellanos, representing low-income community from Alameda County.
Bob Glover from Contra Costa County, representing the economy.
General Rico from Napa County, representing minorities.
I'm Will Din, representing San Francisco County Minority Community.
Martha Silver, Council Secretary.
Alex Bockelman, MTC Deputy Executive Director for Policy.
Well, I'm going to be the presenter. Yeah. I'm Craig Goldblatt from MTC staff.
We'll hear from you in a minute.
Last but not least, I'm Mark Nicholson, Contra Costa County for the Minority Section.
And I'm Charles Kaufman, representing Marin Seniors and Disabled.
Thank you. I'm going to go back now because we have just established a quorum. So I'm going to go back and ask for approval of the March 11th.
Move approval.
And moved and seconded. Any comments? Abstain. Okay, so a call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And abstentions? We have one. Okay. All right. On to the third item here. We have this is a public comment for items not on the agenda. We have one speaker card. If anybody else has any other public comments, please let me know now. Ken Bukowski.
First comment is we should have consistency. The public comment period is at the end of the MTC meetings and it's at the beginning of this one, so consistency would be a good idea. I wanted to mention that this past Sunday I video recorded a community meeting in Berkeley, and these are people who are really concerned about Senate Bill 277, which is a requirement for vaccines. There were three mothers there that lost their siblings to the vaccines, and they just don't want to allow their kids to be vaccinated, and I guess this Senate bill would take away their right to say no, and so they're really concerned about it. There was a scientist there who went over what's contained in these vaccines, aluminum and all kinds of other things, and how the manufacturers are not liable for anything they do. And it was just very enlightening. It's all new to me. And then I recorded an MTCA bag meeting last week where there was a presentation about housing and all the challenges that are facing people that want to build housing. And I think it was a very eye-opening thing to look at. It basically says that Plan Bay Area is not going to work and we're not going to get anywhere near the housing we should because of the difficulties of getting approved in local communities. So I would suggest you may want to watch that. And for the new person, these videos are on regional-video.com. And thank you.
Thank you, Ken. So now I'm going on to the subcommittee reports. And we had one subcommittee earlier this, or last month, I believe. I have Alan Talansky here to speak on that.
We met on April 8th for the Fuel Extraction Tax Subcommittee. We went over the paper, the white paper that I provided, a draft white paper. I'm waiting for comments from the members of the committee. Once we have comments, the committee will meet again and go over an updated white paper. What we hope to do is by the fall present something to MTC staff and then the MTC board where we might get their support in moving forward in supporting a fuel extraction tax in Sacramento. Thank you.
Okay. So next on our agenda is the One Bay Area Grant Cycle 2 update, and we have Craig Goldblatt to report on it.
Hello, I'm Craig Goldblatt. I'm with the Programming and Allocations Group, and I'm the lead for the One Bay Area Grant Program. I'm here today to present our staff recommendations for the next cycle of OBAG, which we're calling OBAG 2. And before I started, I just wanted to get a sense if there's any of you that are not familiar with One Bay Area Grant Program, given that this was adopted in 2012. Is there anyone? Okay. I'll start talking about some of the changes that we're proposing. It's not a PowerPoint. This PowerPoint is for the other item, by the way. Just as a background, when One Bay Area Grant was developed and approved in 2012, the approach was responding to the California climate statutes and SB 375 and our new requirement to include sustainable community strategies in our plan. And going along with that, when we designed the One Bay Area Grant program, there were features that rewarded housing. It targeted the investment of the funds in priority development areas, and there were other policies that reinforced local housing and complete street policies. So we're now coming to the end of the five-year cycle of One Bay Area Grant 1. That's going to end in 2017. Well in advance of a funding cycle coming to an end, we need to build in enough time to start discussing what the next cycle will look like, and that also is to give project sponsors and, in the case of the county program, the congestion management agencies to do project solicitations and get the projects in the program in a timely manner. The One Bay Area Grant 2 is going to be for 5 years as well, and that will be from fiscal year 2017-18 through fiscal year 2021-22. And we're beginning outreach. You're the first group for the kickoff to discuss this program. And then later on in the month, we're going to be going to the other working groups, and then we're going to culminate with going to the Programming and Allocations Committee in June to report to them and see what their reactions are on this proposal. Right now we're really talking more about starting the process. There'll be another outreach process in the fall. So we're going to kind of give you the principles that are going to guide our discussions and some of the major things we're proposing, and a lot of the details will be worked out when we do further outreach in the fall and when we hear from folks like yourself about things you might want to see in the new cycle. And then we're hoping that the commission will adopt this program in November, and then that would kick off selecting projects in the counties and give them a year to pick projects, and then the program would be off and running. The proposed approach for One Bay Area Grant, we're not looking at significant changes. One of the reasons is we did do a report card that we presented last year to this group as well as the Programming and Allocations Committee. There's a link on the first page in the memo if you're interested in seeing what the results of the first cycle were. I think we were very pleased, and we felt that a lot of the program worked well, and we were happy with the kinds of projects and the complexity of the projects that resulted. So we're looking at going into the first principle of OBAG 2 and kind of maintaining the way the program is and making fixes where we need to make fixes. So the first thing is that we would want to maintain realistic revenue assumptions for the program. We really don't know the exact amount because Congress hasn't taken action on these years. We're talking about what the level of federal funds are going to be. So we make conservative flatline assumptions about them. And so we're proposing a five-year program to roughly keep the same size of the program as we had for OBAG 1. The second principle would be to support existing programs and maintain regional commitments as first priority, recognizing revenue constraints. And to see details on that in the memo, there's like a overview summary of what we're proposing for OBAG 2 in terms of the layout of funding, and then attachment 1 goes into a lot more detail. We are going to see some declining revenues from the first cycle, and that will. We had $825 million in the first cycle, and we're going down to $750 million for OBAG 2. So as a result, we're not recommending any new programs, and we're attempting to strike a balance among the OBAG 1 funding needs. So if you look at the more detailed attachment 1, you can see that generally the program levels are maintained from OBAG 1 or decreased. And I think there was one exception was the regional planning category that sees a 2% increase. The overall pot of the entire program goes down 9%. And then the One Bay Area County program, the portion that goes out to the county for local project selection, decreases by 8%. But this is somewhat offset by the federal aid secondary program, which looks at maintaining rural roads and highways. That wasn't in the first OBAG cycle, so that will help bring the reduction won't be that much if you consider those funds for the county program. The other thing is that there was a yellow highlight on that for Safe Route to Schools, and that's just to point out that amount should be $25 million instead of $23 million. So the third principle is to support the Plan Bay Area Sustainable Community Strategy by linking OBAG funding to regional needs housing allocation, RENA, housing production, affordable housing, and smart growth goals. So as I mentioned at the beginning of my presentation, the OBAG program looks at this a number of incentives and targets to support the SCS. We're only recommending minor alterations for OBAG 2, continuing what we felt worked well. We want to see, have a longer time period to see how these policies work. The PDA investment target that we had in Cycle 1, where we required that the counties select projects in direct funding into needs that support priority development areas, will stay the same, which is 50% of the pot for larger county allocations and 70% for the four North Bay counties. There also is a PDA investment growth strategy piece as well to guide in, the One Bay Area grant investments to support priority development areas. Those now are completed. When we approved those, they were there really wasn't enough time to really have a really good sync between project selection and those studies, and now there will be for this cycle. The distribution formula, which distributes funds to the counties, looking at population, housing production, and RENA, which are future housing commitments, has been altered slightly, and this is to emphasize actual housing production over future housing commitments, which was an interest that the commission had when we adopted OBAC 1. And so we're making that change. So the population will remain at 50%. The housing production, which was 25% of the formula, will now be 30%. In RENA, which was 25%, now will be 20%. And then there's a housing affordable factor, you know, in both RENA and the housing production, we're weighing the lower at 60% of those two categories, the lower income units. And then the other change is that we have newer data. We have the newest RENA, and we also have up-to-date housing production that goes through last year that we're using as well in these numbers. So the result of that is in your is in the memo, where you can see the difference in percentages of the distribution between OBAG 1 and OBAG 2. The fourth principle is to continue flexibility in local transportation investment decision-making. One of the main pillars of the OBAG 1 was to allow more funding to go to the local level to make local transportation decisions, and that was 40% of the pot went to that county program, and we're maintaining that portion at 40% for this cycle as well. And we've also are consolidating the Safe Route to School, which was a standalone regional program, into that county program as well. And then there's that FAS program for rehabilitation on rural roads. Those are going to be consolidated into the county OBAG 2 program. The fifth principle is cultivate linkages with local land use planning. We coordinated OBAG with two policies at the local level in the general plan. One is the housing element, which needs to conform and meet RENA. The other one is that we had a complete streets policy as well in OBAG 1. So to go over those two quickly, for the housing element, there needed to be certification by the state HCD, the Housing Community Development Department, and they certify that the general housing element of the jurisdiction's general plan meet RENA. So that was a condition for funding in cycle one. And then for our complete streets requirements, a jurisdiction either had to adopt a complete street resolution, which was a model resolution that MTC provided, or have a general plan that meets a Complete Street Act of 2008 within the circulation element. So there were deadlines. We also, in cycle one, looked ahead for cycle two, when we were requiring on the complete street side that for this upcoming cycle, we wanted all jurisdictions to meet the Complete Street Act of 2008 through their general plan, to kind of go beyond a resolution for those that adopted the resolution. And we're proposing a little bit more flexibility in OBAG 2, and which is those jurisdictions that have not updated their circulation element after 2010 to meet the Complete Street Act's requirements will need to adopt a Complete Streets resolution per the MTC model used for OBAG if they've already not done so. So they will be able, instead of updating their general plan, to adopt, you know, be good with a resolution. And then the last principle is continued transparency and outreach to the public throughout the project selection process. We're going to have a little bit more of a structured reporting approach this time around, where we will request from the Congestion Management Agency a memo that addresses outreach and coordination in Title VI, given that they're making decisions with federal, picking projects that will get federal funding. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. There's more information about this, the report card, and, you know, the general OBAG program on MTC's website, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Craig. Do we have any questions? Okay, Naomi first. Oh. Any others?
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. I believe that Solano County, used OBAG funding for a variety of mobility management activities in the last cycle. Is that correct?
They received money for their SNCI for various ride-sharing activities and safe route to school as well outreach.
Okay, because it wasn't very clear, I think, to some of the other counties that the funding could be used for activities that might be considered mobility management, and I was hoping that through the outreach process that could be made a little more explicit or maybe sort of under sort of which requirements it would need to meet to meet the goals of that funding.
One thing that we're looking at for the next cycle as we work out the details is to include TDM as another eligible category to this program, but we want to hear, you know, from deep such as yourself about what needs you feel you might want OBAG to address. Oh, transportation demand management.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Shireen? Anyone else?
Hi, yes. This is, it seemed like such a successful program in the last round. It was such an exciting thing, and I commend you guys for having thought of it. And in particular, it seemed like the incentive-based approach with complete streets and getting the housing elements certified was so successful, and we're seeing that throughout. It seems like such a good approach to think about that incentive-based approach for other goals that we might have. And in particular, I'm thinking about the issue of housing stability and affordability and how the current challenge with the PDAs to ensure that affordable housing can be built within those areas. Is there an incentive-based approach as well that OBAG funding can be attached to that will help, whether it's MTC staff providing a menu of options and technical assistance around what does housing stability look like in relationship to the PDAs? You know, I'm not sure what that list of options looks like and the technical supports that could be useful, but this incentive-based approach seems so successful, and this housing stability issue seems like such a challenge. It feels like we should find a way to see if we can link those two things together.
I just wanted to add that in the formula itself, we do reward counties, not specific cities with PDAs, but the counties for providing affordable housing, and then we have the PDA growth investment strategies where we are asking for CMAs to inventory what policies are being applied to preserve affordable housing and what things are happening. And we'll be looking forward to hearing more from advocates in those areas to see what we can do.
Okay. Wonderful.
Thank you. Alan?
One of the things I'd like to do, I don't have any problem with what you're doing. I think it's great. I'd like to see in a lot of areas of what the MTC is doing, us relating the One Bay Area Plan and the type of program that you have here to the public, because I don't think the public knows about it. And I was at the Silicon Valley CEO survey today with all the luminaries, all the people, and I don't think the MTC was mentioned but once. And that's with someone picking on someone that wasn't showing up at meetings. I think that it's going to give the MTC, it's going to give the communities a lot that are following the One Bay Area Plan and want to improve things in the priority development areas if we let them know what the benefits are. And these are benefits of following the PDAs and the One Bay Area Plan. And I think it's I think we ought to allocate funds for that. We ought to be looking at that. We ought to be telling people what we're doing on a much broader basis.
Thank you,
Kathleen. Did you?
Thank you for this, Craig. I think to speak to some of what Shireen and Alan just said, I think some of the cross pollination among the different efforts going on right now. I know that Vita and Rich attended the joint the ABAG executive and the planning committee meeting a couple of weeks ago talking about the PDA feasibility assessment. And I think that feeds directly into this, is although we're allocating money and doing a better and better job of dialing that down to incentivize what we want to see in those linkages, there are also those challenges that I thought that panel of developers brought up really effectively, of just some very real local challenges in terms of political will, zoning change. So it would be interesting to me to say, not only are we dialing down more on how we're distributing money, but what kind of TA are we providing? And how are we going to overcome some of these very specific barriers that have been, you know, cited to actually implementing this? Because I know that in the grand scheme of things, these are all related, but sort of making that explicit sometimes might help us provide a little bit more detail or bring that, you know, to our own kind of communities is a little bit more effectively. The other thing I did want to say was just to really applaud in the formulaic aspect of things, upping the affordable housing element to 60%. I know there was a lot of pushback in the last round for even applying the 50%, so I thank staff and leadership for moving that forward and raising that bar even higher.
Any other questions? Bob?
As maybe more of a comment to piggyback on kind of a couple of the comments that were made, you know, we made this in the first round, is maybe taking a look at, in light of, you know, the presentation that was received last week, reducing the impediments and the barriers to development of all types of housing, that there should be incentive provided for that. And then I do appreciate the, you know, and in incentivizing those that go above and beyond, you know, the levels of affordability that are required. So. Rich.
Yeah, I will chime in a little bit. I think some of the things that we're talking about, if we actually want to reduce the impediments, has to be done through Sacramento. One of the examples that I could use is that in bringing below market rate housing, the state has a 25% bonus, and that overrides local land use on density, and you could actually add height to that with a larger bonus and reduce the number of, especially around in priority development areas, especially around, especially rail transit, and you'd get more bang for the buck. I see you looking at me quizzically. Are you familiar with the density bonus that's afforded to developers who do a certain?
Okay. Vaguely.
Okay. Well, it does work, because I can give you examples in some of my communities where it's been used. And if we added a height as far as a density bonus, to enlarge that density bonus, it would go a long ways in accomplishing what we want to accomplish.
Okay. Any other questions or comments at this point? Okay, I have one comment from the public. Ken Bukowski.
Yeah, I had an idea about a displacement policy. If you have a place where you have 25 units and you're going to put 100 units there, could you make 25 of those new units rent controlled, maybe by agreement, as part of the approval for the development? I mean, this would take people who are very opposed to new housing and make them advocates, because you know that they're going to lift up their lives. So what difference would it make if you were able to save those people and they were able to stay in the community? And if you know you're going to be in the community for a long time, then you're going to care a lot more about it, you're going to be more involved. But right now, we got revolving door communities. People are there, and then they're gone, and there's no stability. So this is a policy that would create stability and some form of rent control. And this is rent control you'd be creating. It's really a condition of approval, because if you put some public money in it, maybe some cap-and-trade money, you could make that possible. You could create a community of stable people with this policy and turn people who are opposed to housing into advocates. When you look at the cost of all the current obstacles, it might just pencil out that you do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much, Craig. I think that's thank you for the report. Okay. So we're going to go to our next item, which is the cap and trade update. And for that, we have Matt Maloney.
Good afternoon. This is the second time today I've made this presentation. For those of you that were here this morning at programming
and allocations. I gave a very similar overview to them this morning. To programming allocations today, what we did was actually recommend approval of some regional endorsements for two of the cap and trade programs, Transit and Intercity Rail and the Affordable Housing and Sustainable Communities Program. And so I'm going to run through the details of those two programs, and some of that information is in your packet today. And before I do, I also just want to refresh everybody's memories about kind of cap and trade and the totality of what we're talking about. So first, in this year, FY 2014-15, which is coming to a close, the state budget includes $872 million for cap and trade. The current governor's budget for 2015-16 includes $1 billion, which is an estimate of future revenues that we would receive based upon the cap and trade auctions. And I'll say a little bit more about that towards the end of this presentation. Senate Bill 862 established a long-term framework for cap and trade, establishing program categories, funding percentages, identifying state agencies, and preliminary guidance to some of the program areas. So just to go through that fairly quickly on this table, these are the five main program areas that we have today. And the first thing you might notice is that 40% of the program remains uncommitted. So this is really subject to the legislative process. The governor's current budget for 15-16 does attempt to clarify what some of this money might be used for. But again, this needs to go through the legislative process. And there's, of course, a whole lot of ideas out there in the state about how we might use these funds. The dollar figures in that column are estimates, forecasts, really based upon $2.5 billion a year in cap and trade revenue. That may be a little high, maybe a little low, again, depending upon the auctions, but it's just to kind of give you guys a ballpark estimate of where we might be headed starting next year in terms of how much statewide funding will be available. High-speed rail is 25% of the program moving forward. And this is money that flows directly to the high-speed rail folks. I mean, I think one point in terms of the region's interest in this is the Caltrain electrification project, which is currently going through a potential revise of its funding plan with the nine parties that are part of that MOU. So, you know, one of the funding pieces that might be on the table would be this cap-and-trade high-speed rail money. So that is something that the staffs of those agencies are currently working out. Low-carbon transit operations program is a formula-based transit program that flows directly to the transit operators in the region, as well as the population-based funds flow to MTC. The commission acted on this money back in January. So again, it kind of rolls out by formula, very similar to the STA program. The two programs that I want to spend the most time on today are the last two, which are Transit and Intercity Rail and Affordable Housing and Sustainable Communities. Both of these programs are competitive statewide. And the first, Transit and Intercity Rail, is for transit, capital and operational improvements. They're running the first cycle on a two-year cycle, FY14-15 and FY15-16. And where staff is on this is that the commission directed us to prioritize the Core Capacity Challenge Grant Program projects for the initial funding cycle. So in CalSTA, in terms of the schedule, at the end of June, we'll be publishing a list of approved projects. So I probably should have made this more clear at the outset, but the state agencies are ultimately responsible for the project selection of these two programs. What MTC is doing is attempting to offer recommendations, have formal consultations with these agencies to really give them the regional point of view on this. So just a point of clarification. We got four project submittals in the region for Transit and Intercity Rail. And these are the four on the screen, and the three that we're recommending are highlighted. So in $125 million program, we had $78 million of proposals in the region of these four projects. We are recommending to Cal STA that they fund about $67 million of project. The AC Transit, SFMTA, and VTA projects are all consistent with the Core Capacity Challenge Grant program framework, and that is why the staff is putting them forward for recommendation. Certainly the SFMTA expanding their light rail vehicle fleet. It's really at $41 million of a much larger investment that they're going to be making over the next several years. AC Transit reopening the D3 operating facility, which will allow AC Transit to expand their service. VTA is kind of an ancillary project having to do with the BART Berryessa station, which, of course, sets us up for BART to San Jose. So that's the lay of the land with the transit and intercity rail capital. Moving on to affordable housing and sustainable communities, another competitive program. This is more on the affordable housing side, and that's really where the attention is, where we're paying the most attention to on this program, since many of the projects are affordable housing related. Infill, compact TOD, and infrastructure connecting these projects to transit. This is being administered by the Strategic Growth Council, and $120 million for FY 2014-15. They're running only 1 year on this program, and they'll have 20% of the future proceeds. In March, the Commission approved regional principles for evaluating projects. These are the seven principles on the screen here: GHG reduction, looking at communities of concern, disadvantaged communities, supporting PBA-focused growth investment strategies, looking at levels of housing affordability, not only the fact that we need to produce more housing, but that we need to look at the levels of affordability, supporting the region's adopted transit priorities, funding leverage, and OBAG policy, which here we really mean complete streets policies and updated housing elements by local jurisdictions. So 19 applications in the final round. There's $98.4 million requested. I will say in the final pool of funding that we had almost 40% of the funds in the final pool statewide. So I think one thing to take away is that the Bay Area has done very well in this program. There was a concept round prior to the final round where SGC worked to pare down the applications statewide, and even after that process, we were left with 40% of the total. So I think that just speaks to the number of really ready-to-go important projects here in the Bay Area. So I think, you know, staff's concern was how to prioritize projects among a very deep and competitive pool. 57% of the funding in the pool benefited disadvantaged communities. 69% was for affordable housing, and 76% of funds were in the TOD category. So these are, of the 19 projects that were submitted in the Bay Area, these are the 13 that staff is recommending, really to the Strategic Growth Council for funding. So again, we have projects that we're recommending in four different counties: San Francisco, Alameda, Santa Clara, and Contra Costa counties. The North Bay counties, I should add, Marin, Sonoma, and Napa did not have any applications in the final round. So this is a list of the applications that we received, or the final projects that we're recommending. In total, 13 projects at $63.4 million. In total, these will produce 922 additional units of housing at an average of 46% area median income. And not only are we constructing more affordable housing, but we're also helping to fund a wide range of supportive housing and transportation infrastructure. Lots of these projects have elements that increase pedestrian safety, encourage walking, bicycling, and accessibility to transit. So our recommendation that we made this morning to Programming and Allocations was forwarding approval of staff's endorsement of both of these programs. Of course, the commission will take this up later this month. Later this year, we're going to be returning to the commission with an update, including potential revisions to our cap-and-trade framework. And we're doing this primarily because, I guess, for one reason, we're going to probably have a little more information about what the revenues are going to be in future years, and that's important. We also have the benefit of seeing one funding cycle of these programs go through. So we'll kind of, you know, understand how these programs sort of look and feel, and how well our current cap and trade framework fits within that. I mean, obviously, we want to be as competitive as possible, so we'll be taking another look this fall at that so we can set our priorities for funding. We'll be continuing to monitor the auction results. We had an auction in February, generated $629 million. There's been a lot of attention paid to how much revenue could come on board through this. Through this auction process. There's another auction later this month. And, of course, we're getting really into the nitty-gritty of the FY 2015-16 state budget cycle. Our understanding is that the governor will be putting out a revised budget this week. Obviously, we still have to go through the legislative process on the budget, and hopefully that will provide more information on where we're headed in the next fiscal year with cap and trade. So I will stop there. I know there's a lot of information in your packets with a lot of descriptions of the project and some evaluation pieces. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Okay. Any questions, comments? We start with Mike and then Cynthia.
While I don't represent Marin County, I'm certainly very concerned about transit throughout the Bay Area. Can you better explain why SMART was not recommended of the four choices in this?
Sure. The most obviously SMART is a project that that the region supports and is in Plan Bay Area, and we have an interest in moving it forward. But this project is adding. These are two car train sets for the most part, and this would be adding an additional car.
I understand
to
that.
Several of those.
Yep.
So that's just to give everybody an understanding what the project is. The first reason why staff did not recommend it is because it's not part of the Core Capacity Challenge Grant Program. So what the commission directed staff to do was to prioritize those projects. So that's kind of why you see the AC Transit, SFMTA, VTA. Up on this list because these are projects that are fitting with the core capacity framework. So that's really the major reason why SMART was not recommended by staff. Obviously, it's still, staff and MTC don't get to necessarily make these decisions ultimately, so it's still in the pool. CalSTA gets to decide. But that's the primary reason.
Yeah. Okay. I guess I can't argue with that. I mean, because I don't make those decisions. But what bothers me is that SMART has had funding problems because the quarter-cent sales tax has not produced enough money to do the entire project. And they haven't had their hand out like many other agencies in the Bay Area. And I think that this one time that they do, they probably don't have a good likelihood of getting it. And if you've ever driven the 101 corridor, it's just as bad, if not worse, than Interstate 80 or 237 in the South Bay or 85 or 101 in the South Bay or 680. And even if you couldn't put $11 million in there, it'd be nice to see something in there so they could get something out of it.
Cynthia.
I have the same question, but coming from the viewpoint of the GHG reduction is the biggest one, and it seems like if your criteria was to reduce greenhouse gas, even if it's not part of the core capacity framework, that should have been an overriding consideration in looking at giving money to SMART. So that seems very not achieving purposes by eliminating the biggest reduction from consideration.
So let me respond. That's a very important point you brought up, and I want to respond to it. And it kind of speaks to the asterisk that's on the slide. These GHG reduction numbers are self-reported by the project sponsor. So there's a number of calculations that they have to go through. And there's a number of variables involved that kind of ask the sponsors different questions. And there's a verification process that the Air Resources Board and the state go through and looking at these calculations is generally making sure that the variables, the project sponsors are using, you know, variables that are fair and that are kind of backed up by evidence. And so obviously SMART's GHG number is the highest. One thing that staff at MTC noticed when going through these proposals were that, so again, and this is why I talked about the project. The SMART project is adding an additional, it's not getting SMART up and running, it's adding more capacity to SMART. So what staff would expect is that SMART would actually look at, for one of their variables for GHG, is ridership. So actually look at the incremental ridership that would be added through the addition of these cars. What SMART did instead is that they included the capacity, not ridership, the capacity of the entire line for that variable, which you know, we thought was potentially not the way we would have done it, if we had done this estimation. And is certainly not the way that the other project sponsors approach this question. So while the GHG reduction is higher, and that is the number that is currently in their application, we just wanted to point out that this is subject to verification by the state. And we've had some discussions at the staff level with SMART about the assumptions that they used.
Well, I can understand if it's not apples to apples, but it would be good to at least have given some consideration to a number that is a factor, multiple factor higher than all the rest, even if it's not 100% accurate. The other thing that is, makes sense is there's very few options in the North Bay. We have one freeway where all these other places have multiple options, so it seems like that should be part of the criteria too. So I guess what I'm doing is questioning the criteria.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Let's go to Bob, then Mike.
Okay. Two questions. One is a follow-up to that. And if you did, do you have estimates that if you based it on ridership, on your estimates, what the greenhouse gas reduction would be?
So I'll just kind of point this out. So the ridership for the, not to get into SMART's business too much, because this is their business and they hire their own consultants to do this analysis, but you know, the estimated forecast for SMART in terms of their whole line, it's in the range of like 2,000 to 5,000 a day. So that's currently, that's what they have in terms of two car sets. Now, if you add a third car, I think you could make some kind of estimate that may or may not draw some additional riders. It may. We're adding capacity to the train, so it may. What's SMART? The number that SMART used was over 30,000. So that, and the number that is the total capacity of the whole line. Like literally, you're squeezing everybody on it. There's no room to move. So that's the capacity. So that's the number that was plugged into the GHG calculation. It was over 30,000. I think if we had done it, the number would have been 30 to 50 times lower than that.
Well, I mean, that was my point. I mean, even based on that, if you went 50% lower, does the GHG reduction drop the same ratio to like 600,000? Just still, you know, double what the. I mean, I'm just.
No, it would be probably in the neighborhood. We'd have to do the calculation. This is something that Steve has, I think, you know, wanted me to do. Although I think there's other variables also involved in the calculation, which we'd have to check with SMART to make sure that we're getting. But it would be considerably lower than that and considerably lower than the AC Transit calculation.
Okay. That was kind of what...
Maybe, Bob, I could just chip in. It's a fair question. You know, we got four projects. Why don't we recommend all four? Why are we picking on SMART, right? I do think there is some concern that when SMART opens for business, they may not have full trains.
Yeah.
And I think the smarter... maybe I shouldn't say that. I think the better way to approach this request is to see how they do with the trains they're going to run. And if they are leaving people at the train stop, then we're going to be the first guys helping them find new cars. I frankly do not think that's going to be their problem in the early years. I think like most startup systems, they are probably going to struggle a bit with ridership, and they will build it over time. So I don't think we're here saying this is a bad idea. I think we're here saying it's probably a bit premature, that before you start buffing out your system, why don't you start running it and see how it attracts riders? And once you do, then I think you're going to have a much firmer ground to request funds from the state. And remember, these programs are every year. I think, as Matt indicated, we fully expect that the numbers that we've shown you in terms of what's available, those are low. And so that's going to improve everybody's prospects, not just in the first cycle, but in the ones to come.
One other question, if I could. On the Richmond project, I think it's the Miraflores Senior Housing, under general plan housing element, it says to be determined. Is that because does Richmond not have a certified housing element?
I think our understanding is that their housing element needs to be updated, and my understanding is that that may be in progress this year. But as of this date, it had not been updated.
So would this recommendation be conditioned on them having a certified housing element?
No, it's not conditioned on it. It's one okay. of the principles that we looked at to judge projects, but it's not really a threshold that you have to achieve. It's just something that we looked at.
Okay. All right.
Mike, and then Cynthia, and Kathleen.
I'll accept the answer, and I appreciate the feedback. I understand where SMART may be going. I just think that the ridership that we've seen, the estimates we've seen, might be too low. And I think that may be a case that there's a lot of pent-up demand, and they may do pretty well. But that's I understand your point of view, and I thank you.
And let me just say, I hope you're right and I'm wrong, because then we'll both help them get more cars.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Kathleen.
So it looks as though among the affordable and senior housing, there are three projects that are leveraging TOA.
That's right.
Was that a kind of a threshold? Did you want to get more TOA projects in there? How is this working?
Well, when we looked at whether projects were sort of advancing the principles of Plan Bay Area, we looked at a few things. I mean, were we building more affordable housing units? Were we doing it within PDAs potentially? And was it a TOA project? And that's something that we wanted to make sure that we looked at sort of in the criteria. So there were three in the final round. There were three projects that were TOA projects, and all three of those were recommended for funding.
So those were the only TOA projects that you got?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Mark?
I'm going to run back to the SMART issue just quickly. So the capacity that they projected, was that based on just travel within the North Bay, or was that for San Francisco? Do you know if the original projection?
Well, I think the capacity is literally based on, like, the space of the train car and how many people you can put on it. And it assumes a current level of service for SMART.
Exactly. So, but what I was asking is the destination, the projected destination, is it for San Francisco, Cisco, or was it some of it for the North Bay Area?
I think it could have been just the initial segment, which is
initial
Santa Rosa to San Rafael.
That's right.
Given how many SMART supporters there are here, maybe I should give you some other good news, which is SMART has been pursuing, and we have been assisting them, federal funding to complete the line to Larkspur in Marin so that it would connect to the ferry, which gets you to San Francisco, which is, I think, what's behind your question.
Exactly, okay. Because I also wanted to know if they're asking for additional capacity with their train set, are they also projecting additional capacity with the ferries? Is there any proposals out there?
No, there isn't. But I think the important thing is to try to make that link, because I think it will pretty self-evidently improve their prospects for carrying more riders. And the good news is, MTC redirected $20 million worth of bridge toll funds and sort of challenge SMART to go find the rest in Washington. And in the budget that the House of Representatives Appropriations Committee just approved, even though it cut Amtrak and did some other crummy things, it includes $20 million for the SMART extension to Larkspur. So getting it out of the House is probably the biggest hurdle. And so I think it's likely that we could secure those funds, which means that SMART can build that extension to Larkspur and improve the ridership when they open up.
And with that said, and given time, 2 or 3 years, we'll be able to see their capacity and see what we can help.
Exactly.
Okay. Rich, anybody else? Rich, go ahead.
Just a couple of things. We talked earlier about the distribution of housing, and I really don't have an argument with it. I think just for the group, the only thing I mentioned is that we're trying to find ways to get people off of the bridge into central San Mateo for work. And I would like to see, we do have available land. Actually, some of it is free land. There's 1 acre at Bay Meadows to generate some of this funding so that we can get people out of their cars, because I know from being on a below market rate housing board that usually low-income people drive. If transit's not really readily available, because they look at the cost only by the cost of gasoline. And that's just a fact that anybody that's ever worked in these areas know that that occurs. And I think there's a real greenhouse of savings by having more housing in the West Bay, and that's what we're striving for in some of our cities, not all of them. And so I would just leave that and hope that in the next round that we get some acknowledgement that some of our cities are really trying to make that happen. And just the other question I have for you with this $20 million for SMART, I've always been very supportive of SMART. I was very disappointed by Larkspur's stopping the line from going all the way to the ferry. Has that been corrected?
I'm afraid it hasn't, Rich, and I'm just as disappointed as you are. We did double-check because, as I think many of you know, we have a policy that conditions our investment of regional funds that we need to see sufficient land use supportive elements along the corridor for us to invest. And I think SMART still has that, even though Larkspur, they didn't even spend all of our grant that we gave them to develop the plan. They just stopped. And all I can say is that I think the climate in Marin is right now just a little bit unbalanced when it comes to discussing these questions.
That's kind.
But look, we're going to get the. It looks like we're going to get the extension there, and maybe they'll come along later. That's as you know how we've done a lot of the BART TOD development. We didn't do it when we built BART, which is when we should have done it. We've done it in a retrofit sort of after the fact way, and maybe we'll have to do that with SMART.
It seems to me, that I'm trying to remember in Larkspur, that a lot of the business development is near the ferry. And it seems to me that any business person would want people getting off of a train much closer to their businesses. All of the urban development in the city I grew up, where you have these neighborhood shops, were at the crosses of streetcar tracks. It's just
I think it's not so much business or commercial development, Rich. It's housing. That's what the neighbors didn't want.
Any other questions or comments? I had a couple. And my comment on the affordable housing sustainable communities is that I'm really heartened to see that the Bay Area did really well in the overall statewide pool. And I think that, I'm curious to see how it all ends up in terms of, this is kind of foreshadowing my second question, but to see how the state figures it out at the end, if it ends up, if there's like a geographic ration reapportionment, or if the Bay Area does actually get a good share, because I think we have a lot of good projects, good developments that are in the pipe. The other thing I was going to say too is I think that and again I'm not as familiar with all these developments, but I'm curious to see round two. A lot of these developments were ready to go. I mean, this is like the last bit of, you mentioned shovel ready and ready to go. I think that
that's a great criteria for year one. I don't know if the program's going to kind of rethink that, because now you're going to get into developments that have a lot of merit and that maybe got stuck post redevelopment agency period. And if there's even some thinking about, you know, that this source might help some of those projects. I like the idea of tracking the TOA, because that's kind of the MTC's first infusion into trying to get projects kind of figured out, and then kind of on the back end saying, okay, can we bring them and make them shovel to the ground? So I like that idea, just that we'll see. I don't want to foretell, but it may be a little bit harder for the next set of projects to get there. I hope not. I hope that they'll work their way up and be ready, as like these ones here. And then the question I had, which I don't know if it's too soon to ask this, but since this is a state agency-run program, I was just curious from a staff perspective at the regional level how it's been to kind of inform both on both the transit side and on the AHSC. Like, like I said, it may be too soon for you to give us a sense of, like, is it receptive? Are there, you know, has it been a good coordination between the regional and the state level?
I can say that, especially on this program, which is extremely complex and isn't necessarily like in our wheelhouse as more of as transportation planners. I mean, there's a lot of housing in this program, and so we've learned a lot going through it. And I would say that to date, the way that we've worked with, we've had a good working relationship with SGC and the staff of HCD on this program. I could say that they were very interested in the recommendation that we made today, and we briefed them last week on where we were going with that, and there will be sort of like a formal consultation with their staff, you know, once the commission here acts. But, you know, I think it's important to note we're way out ahead of them in terms of making this recommendation. They're not going to act until late June. So this is really, it's really statewide. This is the MTC is the first body that's really come out with a recommendation on this program. So they're taking notice. I would say that just on a staff level, I mean, I've been very impressed with some of the staff at those agencies, especially in terms of the sophistication with which they look at these housing projects. I mean, some of these things are very complex projects. They have multiple funding sources, 10 to 20 different funding sources in various states of readiness, and you really have to have staff that can go in there and kind of have an understanding of whether these things are actually, whether the numbers are right and whether these projects are actually as ready to go as the project sponsors claim they are. And so I've been impressed on that level. I think we'll have to see how the consultation with the state agencies works and inevitably where they land in terms of their recommendation. They have a whole lot of scoring criteria as well that they have to work through. And you know, then they have a board that they have to you know, advance these recommendations through. So we'll see. But I think on the staff level, it's been fairly cooperative.
I will add one thing, Mr. Chairman, if I could, and it's a bit of a word of warning. I think we have been sort of pleasantly surprised, not only at how good the interaction's been, but frankly how well we've done so far in terms of getting projects into the final round. The fact that we've done so well means that somebody else didn't do so well, right, too. And that somebody else is Los Angeles. And that's where the president of the state Senate hails from. And so I am a little bit concerned that they did so poorly and they could end up doing so poorly after they picked the projects that he could decide to rip this up and write some new law that does it a different way.
Right.
So I think we do need to be mindful. Just for example, there is this crazy requirement that the Strategic Growth Council adopted that says you can't win more than $15 million in one city.
Right.
Now, that actually is constraining San Francisco here in the Bay Area, because they've got lots of projects that add up to more than that. And we're, in fact, recommending slightly more than that back to the folks and hoping they break their own rule. But can you imagine saying that the city of Los Angeles is limited to the same level as the town of Cotati. You know, that's basically what it is.
It's the most densely populated SMSA.
So, look, I think they have some things to learn about how to balance politics, and that's something that, you know, we try to do well here, because if you're consistently excluding major areas, and it's not consistent yet, this is just the first round,
right.
But you do that at your peril, and you really want to keep everybody, you know, not happy all the time, but you don't want somebody too mad at you, because they could really disrupt the process.
Right. Okay, a couple more, Rich and then Kathleen.
Yeah, that's one thing I hadn't mentioned, talked to you offline. It's just unbelievable that this $15 million is held to Los Angeles. And as I said, sort of half-heartedly, is that our fiefdoms here are finally starting to pay off in grants, because we have so many different jurisdictions. But I might add, in the political realm, thanks to the Burton brothers, the state Senate and the Assembly were pretty well controlled by Northern California. That's no longer the case, and it's not only the Senate pro tem, but also the Speaker is from Los Angeles. So we have very little control over the agenda now from Northern California.
Kathleen?
Well, I also wanted to ask, it sounds like there's a fair amount of staff discretion maybe at work here at the state level. Is that also going to apply to, going back to the sort of CalEnviro screen threshold issues we had with defining disadvantaged communities? Because that's sort of an overlay across a lot of this funding through the SGC, isn't it?
It is, and I actually don't believe that the CalEnviro screen process is really kind of coming back up for review next year. It may be, but I'm not aware of whether it is. There's some level of staff discretion on these programs, but they've also, on this affordable housing program, they've really constructed quite a sort of technocratic exercise for themselves. There are multiple overlapping criteria that they're using, and I think they're going to make that criteria very public. As we are also trying to do here. So I think, you know, as all things, it will come down to politics a bit in the end, and there will be some staff discretion, but I think they're also, you know, doing their best to evaluate these projects based on the merits.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, if there are no more one more, Jim.
All right, I just wanted to follow up on something Steve said. If the... I think you said the state pro tem, the Senate, is from Los Angeles. If he were to rip up the law and want to change it, would that affect or possibly affect this round of funding, or would that be like 2016?
No, my guess is he'd be looking into the future. So this round, I expect, will proceed as planned. And remember, the other thing I'd ask you to just keep in your memory banks is the 40% of the cap-and-trade money that's not committed. And you may see more of that committed in this next budget process. And you may see earmarks coming out of the next budget process. I can assure you they're not going to leave it unspent. They're going to do something with it.
No.
Okay. Thank you. If there are no more questions, thank you very much, both you, Matt and Steve, for providing insight and the report to us.
Thank you. Thank you.
So on to our next agenda item is the staff liaison report, and Pam's here to tell us about it.
Well, I'll just briefly go over what's in my notes for you, and that's to remind you that we have our first round of meetings underway for Plan Bay Area 2040. We have gone through most of them, but tonight we are meeting in San Francisco, and May 28th will be in Marin. Those are the final two that we have. And I also want to remind you that you'll be meeting again this month. So you had your hiatus last month, and no good deed goes unpunished. So you'll be meeting twice this month, 2 weeks from today, back in this room at 11 o'clock with the commission. And this is your chance once a year to meet face-to-face with the commissioners and discuss your work plan. It's a very sort of informal setting where a portion of the meeting is spent just talking about what's coming before the commission for the year, but also a chance for you to say what's important to you as well. So we have that agenda that we're working on now. We'll spend a portion of it kind of recapping what we've heard, a little bit of the meetings for Plan Bay Area Outreach, but also a time for you to introduce yourselves to the commissioners who are here and then talk about the work plan. So please plan on that. We will be serving lunch, so if you have any allergies, please let me know immediately because I'll just be ordering that. So let me know if you have any allergies or any proclivities. Also, tomorrow is Bike to Work Day. And if you haven't heard, there is a mayor's bike-off between two of our commissioners. So that's very exciting. You can check that out on our website. Mayor Schaaf and Mayor Liccardo are going at it. So may the best man or woman win. Also, we had a month's hiatus, and Jake McKenzie is the commission's new vice chair. So you've seen that in there. We also, in addition to welcoming Cynthia Murray, we have two vacancies still on the council, so we'll be looking to try to get those filled as soon as possible. And that's... Oh, no, one more thing. In a continued parking pricing analysis that we're doing here, I want to let you know that there is a parking pricing expert panel that will be meeting on June 2nd, and Rich Hedges is already signed up, of course, but you're all welcome to sign up for that. It is up on our website, but you can just send an email to info@mtc as well to sign up for that. It's June 2nd here in this auditorium at 1 p.m., and if you'd like to come, you're welcome. It's a national panel. Betty Deacon at UC Berkeley is on the panel, Donald Shoup of UCLA, and a few others. So I have a flyer, but it's also up on our website if you're interested in coming to that. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Pam. So on to the next item, which is the council member reports. Do we have any council members? Okay, Rich first, then Alan.
I've attended two of the Plan Bay Area meetings so far. I went to the one in Concord and the one in San Mateo. I'm going to try to go to the Marin meeting, but there's also a meeting that same night at the fairgrounds regarding the community choice aggregation of energy, which I'm also interested in because we're looking at doing that in San Mateo County. I'm just going to have to figure out which one's the most important to me or where I should be. But I was very impressed with this round of meetings. The staff has set up a situation where you can go to individual posts and review that part of Plan Bay Area, make comments which you can actually post. It's eliminated the theater seating, which allowed groups from certain affinity areas to, for lack of a better term, to sort of come in and try to shut the meeting down so the information can't be disseminated. I think it's an excellent way to put out the information. The one in Concord went far better than I thought it would. That's one of the reasons I went to it, to support the staff, because that's one of the areas where they had some of the problems before. The one in San Mateo went quite well. We had a couple of people. I could name them, but they're well known to people in that area that are anti-housing people there. But I thought it was a really good group, and we turned out a lot of people for that meeting, I thought.
Yeah, I was at the San Mateo meeting also, and you had a lot of community leaders there, not only elected leaders, non-elected leaders, neighborhood people, neighborhood leaders. I thought it was very effective, and you had citizens wanting to find out what it was all about. Still, whenever I'm at these meetings, I find that no one even understands what the One Bay Area plan is. And I'll keep harping on that, like I harp on some other things, is that we have a story and we need to all tell the story. And we need to tell everyone what this means, how important it is. Everyone complains about traffic. Everyone complains about housing. And the thing is they have to understand that housing helps take care of the traffic. One other thing, I was at Silicon Valley CEO meeting today, the survey. Pam, if you'd like me to, I'll give you a copy of the survey if you'd like to have it copied and distributed. It's how CEOs feel about the communities and what's going on. And the two top items there, are you surprised, is traffic and housing. And they keep trading places. Okay, and that's the biggest concern CEOs have for putting their companies here and people have for moving here. There's a lot of companies that are realizing, and some of the people at the CEO summit said, we have to get involved in housing. We have to take advantage of that and really get them involved because it's not going to work in the tens or twenties. We have to get into the thousands in the Bay Area to make something happen with this housing issue. And it has to become part of the word. If we want to thrive as a community, we have to deal with this housing issue now. We can't wait.
Thanks, Alan.
I'm singing to the choir, aren't I?
Yeah. I see. Jim, do you have a comment? And Shireen. Jim first.
Oh, no. Okay.
There we go.
I wanted to follow up on Alan's comment. I finally got onto the... the train here when it comes to Plan Bay Area, for sure. Last month, I started reaching out to the blind community more than before in San Francisco, California Council of the Blind. We have a San Francisco chapter, and I talked a lot about Plan Bay Area. And so as a result, the president and I have posted on, you know, we have a website for all of our members and guests about meetings coming up for Plan Bay Area, and that includes the one this evening. So I think it's really important to start putting the word out and getting people involved, and that includes the disabled community as well. I don't think we've done a lot in that area, and I'm starting to do so, and just thought I'd let you know.
Look at that.
Okay, thank you. Shireen?
As follow-up to Alan's comment as well, in San Mateo County, the health system, the health policy and planning program, the program that's focused on place-based policies to help prevent illness, has been doing a strategic planning process where we've been holding workshops across the county, doing focus groups with specific populations, as well as doing a broad-based survey around how people define the key components of healthy, equitable communities. And the number one priority that we're seeing over and over is this issue of housing stability for the health of our communities. Transportation is certainly up there as far as the top priorities as well, but housing stability just seems like it is it's just really hitting home for so many of our citizens right now. So interestingly, it's an enormous business issue. It's an enormous issue for residents and for the health of our population.
Thank you. Cynthia.
So just to reiterate how employers are very, very concerned about housing. Last Friday, the North Bay Leadership Council did a North Bay Housing Summit. We had about 300 people there, and it is definitely one of the top issues for employers from a standpoint on economic competitiveness, ability to retain and attract talent. We're going into not only the need to be able to get our employees closer to where they work, but we're in the talent shortage. And so it's really affecting the ability for us to have talent. And the millennials in particular are choosing not to come to the high-cost housing areas because they know they'll never be able to get a home because they don't want to pay 50 to 70% of their salaries for housing. So we as employers are completely committed now to fighting for more housing, workforce housing, affordable housing, as Bob said, basically all housing. We need it all. And it's gone on for decades now, and it's time to really make a turn on that. So I'm excited about trying to build a new coalition in an area that's had a lot of rancor and opposition to housing so that we can really turn it around.
Thank you. Okay. One more, Rich.
The Bay Area economy is cyclical. When I first came here, it had a large manufacturing base. Most of that is gone. Manufacturing base stabilizes the economy in downturns. Our economy now is software, biotech, and service. The minute the economy tanks, the jobs go away.
So people that are complaining about the traffic need to look back to 2008, and we have to remind them of that, when there was no problem with traffic, but we were closing fire stations and we were laying off police officers. Yep. And this was going to happen again. Don't try to kill it. It'll kill itself. And we need to do those reserves for the cities and the counties while the economy's hot. And if you have a chance, read Triumph of the Cities. It's a great book, and it outlines all the reasons why you want to have housing that's affordable.
Thank you, Rich. So on the next agenda item, our last agenda item is new business. Anything else that people want to... Bob?
Yeah, just briefly. I think it's been a while since we met, and I brought up at the last meeting my concern with the limited amount of time we had on that last, which I thought we had great breakout sessions. I'd like to hopefully get that agendized for a meeting coming up. And two things that I think would be important to that on those lines was, one, the presentation that was received at ABAG MTC, Joint Planning Committee, Admin Committee on infill and transit-oriented development impediments and struggles and feasibility, I think, was the title. That and the other thing would be the, since we had our last meeting, the Legislative Analyst Office came out with the report on the high cost of housing. If you haven't read that, please do. It's been the subject of many news reports. I think I've spoken on six panels since then talking about it. Take a look at it. It'd be great to have it come back to this committee for discussion as well.
Absolutely. Great. Thank you. Any other additional items for agenda, future agenda? Oh, okay. Mike.
I don't know if we're biting off more than we can chew on this, but I think it was announced this week or last week that BART needs $9.6 billion for state of good repair. And I know that looking at the SMART, $11 million is like chicken feed, but... I ride BART to work in the city. I drive to Walnut Creek and get on there. And, man, I'm just wondering, where's that money going to come from? Too bad Steve is not still here.
Yeah. Okay. Then at that...
Can I just make one?
Oh, yes. Pam.
I just want to make one more announcement that MTC has gone to a new system of reporting called Granicus in our effort to go paperless. Our minutes will be different next month, just letting you know that. There'll be fewer words. So just letting you know. We are audiocast, so everything that you say is still recorded. It's still audio recorded. It's just not going to be put down on paper. So I don't want you to feel like slighted somehow that your words are not down on paper, but it is an effort for us to have less paper around. So I didn't want you to be shocked when you see that with the minutes next time. They're going to be recorded in terms of just action items that are taken. Will be down in the minutes. Minutes will be done in terms of action items, the way minutes should be. But basically, what you'll be hearing on the audio cast, you can always go back to our audio archives that are on our website if you want to hear anything that was said. But what will be in the minutes are action items. So just letting you know that ahead of time so you won't be shocked when you see the minutes next month.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you. So at this point, I'm going to... call for adjournment, and thank everyone for helping me have a smooth meeting today and good commentary. And Randy, we'll be back with you probably in 2 weeks, so definitely look forward to seeing you back in 2 weeks at 11 o'clock. Thank you. Approved.